Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Tuesday, June 24th.
Good morning.
Hi, Charlotte. It was, first day of summer a couple days ago, right?
Yeah.
We're officially in the summer.
Yeah.
Summer solstice. And I think that, you know, that summer solstice thing, I think is an ancient thing that was... discovered and whatever, you know.
The summer solstice.
It's like, it means it's the beginning of summer.
Oh, okay.
There's a winter solstice too, which is, uh-huh. You know, 6 months opposite of that. And then you have the spring equinox, which means that the days and the nights are equal.
Okay.
And that's in March. And then you have the fall equinox, which is in September.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the days are equal. That's why they call it equinox. You see, I'm pretty smart when it comes to that stuff.
You are. I think it was either Saturday or Sunday that was the longest day of the year.
Yeah.
And then it starts getting light earlier.
Yeah.
Now, right?
That's true. Is it the longest day of the year? Probably,
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
It was either Saturday or Sunday. I can't remember which.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. Okay, so, yeah, that's the first day of summer.
Okay.
Okay, so it's 21st, 20, usually 20th, 21st, 22nd.
One
I'm
of
not
those.
Exactly sure, yeah. Okay, well, cool. So we're in the midst of summer now. Mm-hmm. Not that we needed any reminder, right?
I know, and I feel like the past couple of days have been cooler.
Yeah, I know.
Which has been nice.
But I love the weather here. I mean, you just can't beat it, you know?
No, you can't. You really can't. I find myself doing what you do this morning. I had a cleaner coming, and I was cleaning for the cleaner. and I stopped myself, and I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
The cleaner's coming. This is her job.
I know. And I always have to put everything away, because you know what happens is if you leave it out, then
you don't know where everything is.
Exactly. They're going to put it away wherever they think.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have to go looking for it.
Yeah.
Completely. Besides, there's some things I don't want them to see, you know, like certain bills or whatever.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's funny, though.
Yeah. But I literally stopped myself. I was like, Charlotte, what are you doing?
Yeah.
This is what the cleaner does. She cleans. You don't need to put the dishes in the dishwasher.
I know. I did the same thing. Like, you know?
it's not necessary.
Because I think it's a sense of like... making your house look good when people come over.
Right.
You know, it's like we forget it's the cleaning lady.
Yeah.
But you just want it to look presentable.
Yeah.
I think we don't want to see people like in our mess and stuff, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Except I don't really have a lot of mess anyway. You know, I'm a pretty organized person.
Yeah.
My clothes are not on the floor. They go mm-hmm. in the hamper. You know, I do my laundry and... You know, all that
Everything
stuff.
Goes away, yeah.
Yeah, so except with the laundry, I don't put it away. That's why I wait for the maid to come. I only have her come to every 2 weeks. But so there's a week where I live with my clothes washed and dried, but they're all sitting on the bed. And then I kind of pick out what I need to wear because I have no patience folding clothes at all.
I kind of like doing laundry.
Wow.
I find it kind of therapeutic.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is weird.
Okay. But well, you consider for some money coming and doing my laundry for me. I mean, I like when she comes and folds it, you know, but it's not like every week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I kind of like doing it.
You see, that's cool. Yeah, you're lucky that way. I mean, I've heard people that say, I like cleaning. I like that. You know, it relaxes me. Whatever. That's the last thing I want to do is clean. You know, so that's why I'm grateful. A little later in my life now, I can afford to have a maid do it.
Yeah.
So that's funny. Because for many years, I would clean on my own. I would leave Saturday or Sunday open. Mm-hmm. And start cleaning the apartment, and I go, oh, man, I just hate this. Doesn't matter if I put on great music and all that stuff, take my time. Yeah.
So yeah, some... I've done my fair share of cleaning for probably a good few months from my other apartment. Yeah. I'm not cleaning for a while. I'm taking some time off.
Yeah, there you go. So did you do the walkthrough yesterday? How did that turn out?
Perfect.
Really?
Everything was perfect. Good. I was so happy. I didn't even need to fight with them.
Good. Good for you. You
see, so yeah, I was happy, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd have to fight with them because you took your time to make sure everything's fixed up.
The man was like, "You did this by yourself?" I was like, "Yes, I told you I would." He was like, "Really? You didn't hire someone?" I was like, "No, I did it."
Wow.
Because, I mean, he came. Everything was a mess. I had everything everywhere. I hadn't packed half of my stuff. Right. The carpet was messy. Like, everything was just, I mean, really wasn't that bad. But it just needed vacuumed. Like, everything was just everywhere because I was moving.
Right.
And I was like, I told you I would do it. Like, when everything is out, it's so much easier.
Yeah,
of course. It's not, like, that hard, but I did everything. I scrubbed the floors in the kitchen.
Wow.
Yeah.
You even scrubbed the floors, huh? Yep. Wow, good for you.
Yeah, even scrubbed the floors.
Didn't give him any reason.
No reason. And he was like, you even painted? I was like, yeah, I painted. You told me to.
Wow. So that's cool. So now you're living near the beach.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you it's much cooler there, huh?
It is.
The air is nicer, right?
Yeah. And I just find it overall more relaxing down there.
Yeah.
I
mean,
I
do you see the ocean from where you are?
No.
Or do you have to walk
there? It's a couple blocks.
Right.
But still,
you get the ocean breeze
and
everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the smell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
I like it a lot.
Good for you. So now you're living in L.A., it's not, or is it like a Playa address or?
It's Playa Del Rey.
Okay, so it's not Sherman Oaks anymore.
Yeah, it's not Sherman Oaks, no.
Okay.
Or even L.A., it's, yeah, there's so many different places. Because when I moved, I was like, oh, my address will be L.A., but then I was like, oh, no, it's Sherman Oaks, what is this place?
Yeah, I know. I know, lots of zip codes in this city.
Yeah, so many.
I know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's fun, you know, mm-hmm. I like it, and...
I still love it up here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's nice. It's nice. I mean, all of LA is pretty cool, you know, and it doesn't always get the credit it deserves.
No, it doesn't.
I think, you know, because of the traffic and everything and people, some people are, you know, are phony and stuff, but that doesn't mean the whole city is like that.
Right. Completely. You know,
we have 4 million people here.
Yeah.
I always meet nice people. Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
It's because of Hollywood and how people think it is.
Exactly. So some people are like that. Maybe even many people are like that. But there are just as many, I think, or more that are decent human beings, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Never mind that some blow me off after a date, but... You know, it happens. So I blew someone off and I got blown off this weekend. So it came out even, I guess,
yeah,
right?
I guess that's
but,
the
but
way
no
it goes.
Winners there. So yeah,
maybe the next one will be you both like each other.
Yeah, I know. The adventure continues, you know. It just amazes me how some women are like so eager to meet you through text and phone calls and everything, and then you meet each other, and it's not the same.
No.
Even for me, you know, I mean, it's not the same because you, there's no, that's why I'm saying, you know, long-distance relationships are no good. I mean, to me, they don't work. You know, I used to be in a long-distance relationship where I had to fly to see her.
Wow.
And... That's just not fun, you know?
Yeah.
So there's no substitution to being with someone next to them. So that's how you really know a person. Not only that, but I mean, they say in the first 30 seconds, to me, the first 2 seconds, I already know if I'm going to be attracted to that person or not.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe that's what happened to her. Maybe, you know, just wasn't her type. What am I going to do, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you keep trying. And
definitely.
But it's fun, you know? I mean, just the adventure of it is fun. The process of meeting people. That's why I don't mind, you know? I'm saying, you know, like there was this woman I didn't have a good feeling about meeting and stuff. But I said, okay, you know, let's give it a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, it didn't, you know, I mean, I wasn't crazy about her or anything at all. But before that, it was constant texting and all that. And then after that, it just stops.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing more to say, you know.
Right. And you know, and I think I've said before, but you can hide behind your phone.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in person, you have to be who you are. You can't really fake it. Or,
exactly. Not your pictures. Yeah. You don't want to put false pictures there.
Yeah.
And that's what some people do. I mean, they'll put up like blurry pictures. You don't know who they mm-hmm. are. The one I liked actually turned out to look better than her pictures. But you
that's
know,
a nice surprise.
Yeah. But look, I knew it was doomed when 2 minutes after we met, we're like standing in line to get some food and coffee. And she's like, let me check the time.
Oh, no.
I'm like, oh, no. So she's like, yeah, because it, you know, I have to leave in an hour or so to go to soccer game, watch a soccer game and all that. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, whatever. So it was fun time, you know. But
at least you got to hang out for the hour. And,
yeah, you meet people.
Exactly. Yeah. Completely, yeah.
Get to practice my lines and everything. Yeah, that's the thing. I don't have any lines. I just go there
I was
myself.
Say, do you have any, no, any pickup lines?
Not at all. Not at all. I'm not good with that at all. I don't. I seldom, just seldom, never walk up to a woman and just hit on her. Mm-hmm. You know, it might start as a conversation, and you know, we're like in an elevator, or you know, you walk by someone, you smile to them, you start a conversation.
Yeah.
But I never would walk up to a woman in a club and give her a line or something, you know. It just doesn't happen. So yeah. Obviously I miss out on a lot, but at the same time
I think women will probably respect that. I hate when people say cheesy lines.
Yeah. No, but I mean I don't even walk up to them, you know. Yeah. So that's a loss for me.
Mm-hmm.
For not risking the rejection and stuff. But let me tell you, rejection can be brutal.
Yeah.
From a beautiful woman, you know.
Yeah.
So so I don't do it very often, you know. I think most of my serious relationships have been women that hit on me.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, I mean, obviously, I mean, it turned out well and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. But sometimes you want to pick someone that you want. And I've never been good with that. I'm kind of shy when it comes to that.
Yeah.
You know, but striking up conversations with people, even with women, is no problem. But the moment there's some sexual tension, it's like you're afraid of the rejection because you know it's going to come, you know.
Yeah.
They're likely, more often than not, you know. Yeah. All right. Well, I totally forgot to introduce our guest, and he's calling right now. So let's go ahead and get this, and we'll get familiar with him together. Good morning. You're on the air. Is this our guest for this morning, Simon?
Sure is. How's it going? Is this Sam?
Yes, yes. Simon, is it Donato or Donato? How do you pronounce it?
You nailed it the first time, Donato.
Donato, okay, you got it. Simon, I didn't even have time to introduce you and everything, so I just want to summarize why you're calling. As you've been fascinated with a missing airplane, and you started a show, I guess, on TV called Boundless, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about this, Simon. How this came about? What plane is it that you're looking for?
Well, a couple of years ago, I started an organization called Adventure Science, and that was in 2008. And we went out. Our first project was looking for a missing airplane flown by famous pilot Steve Fawcett. And since then, we've actually looked for a number of missing airplanes. And I first started looking for this one in 2011. And the airplane is a World War II era fighter/training jet. It's flown by a man named David Steves, who was 23 at the time that this aircraft went missing. And basically, he was on a routine flight across country, leaving from Fresno. And somewhere over the Sierra Nevadas, a little bit east of, a little west of Bishop, California, he got into some trouble. There was an explosion near the cockpit that knocked him out. And when he came to, there was smoke, the controls weren't responding, so he ejected. And he lived for over 50 days in the wilderness. It was a fantastic survival story. And this all happened in 1957.
Wow.
So that's the jet that we're looking for.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, so what's fascinating you about finding planes? I mean, obviously, you just said it's been more than this plane. That's kind of unusual, you know? I mean, it's not something that people do every day.
Yeah, it's unusual, I guess. But what we do with the Adventure Science Group is basically combine researchers and scientists with athletes and take on these projects that are unusual and that are, you know, out of reach for a lot of people. So we use the fitness and stamina of the athletes to get them in really challenging geographic locations, and then we use the research capabilities of the scientists to help, you know, refine the scope of the project. So in this case, and in other aircraft wrecks, you know, there's a really interesting human story. So other ones, you know, the pilots and passengers have been missing. So there's family members who want closure and want to know what happened to their loved ones. So there's that part of it. With this story, since Steve's actually lived, what was really interesting there is since the jet didn't turn up and this was Cold War era timing, all of a sudden there was wild speculation. So initially he was lauded as a national hero, and it was front page news for weeks. And then people started digging into this and said, hey, well, where's the airplane? Did you fly to Mexico and then sell it to the Russians? And basically he was discredited and it ruined his reputation. So it was really tabloid fodder after that. So for us, it's important because it's in the backcountry of the Sierra Nevadas where not a lot of people travel to. We're at elevation, so we got up as high as 12,000 feet, which is pretty high. Right. A lot of it was off trail, scrambling through quite vertical terrain, loose rocky terrain. And we had done a lot of math and calculations on possible flight paths and scenarios that could have played out. And basically, we're just methodically crossing scenarios off the list. So that was kind of the focus of this one.
So that's this week's episode of Boundless on Esquire Network?
No, Boundless is an entirely different thing. So Boundless started from one of my adventure science projects where when I did my first ultra running race, which was 125 kilometers or about 70 miles or so, 75 miles, I wanted to do a study to see what the effect of core strengthening was on athletes, if it would help reduce the amount of discomfort, pain, and injury through the race. And I also filmed it as a short documentary. And that documentary, we then spun into a television show, which became Boundless. So now in Boundless, myself and my good buddy Paul, a.k.a. Turbo, we travel the world doing tough endurance races, running, cycling, paddling. So this week in Boundless, we actually are in Peru doing a river rafting race where we had to build our own rafts out of balsa logs and paddle down the Amazon for, over 100 miles, 110 miles.
Wow. Wow, that sounds fabulous.
Yeah, you probably get bored easily, right? I mean, that's why you need all the stimulation.
I like to work on multiple projects simultaneously. That's a fair statement.
But I mean, a distance of 127 kilometers, man, I don't know anybody that... So you run that or do you walk?
Oh, sometimes we run it. In Peru, we're on the Amazon River, so we paddled that. But in the running races, we'll run as much of it as possible because, you know, you don't want to be out there any longer than you have to be. But
that's true.
It's tough business running these races.
Yeah. I mean, my God, this is like, I mean, I can see the title, Boundless, you know. I mean, the thing is, I guess nothing is going to stand in your way with all the things that you're doing and the things that you want to do. So that's amazing. So now I imagine, you know, looking for an airplane like that, even in a general area that you think it's going to be in, is like looking for a needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
You know, and here you are saying that you guys were actually doing it on foot, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
You're right. It's definitely looking for a needle in a haystack. And what makes it extra challenging is that there's no radar tracks for him. So we don't even have kind of last known position at the time of his ejection from the aircraft. So, you know, there's a lot of speculation out there, but, you know, we do know where his end goal was. We do know where he landed by parachute. In 1977, a troop of Boy Scouts found the canopy. So when you eject, you know, the canopy, the glass cover,
right,
flies off the aircraft. So that was found in 1977. So, you know, we've got a general area of where, I'll just say, debris has been found. And typically, the aircraft is not too far away from, you know, where the canopy, the ejection seat, and the parachute ultimately land. So for our scenarios, since we don't know how high he was when he ejected, you know, that's the math that we've played with. And, you know, okay, if he ejected from this height, how can you actually model the trajectory of the parachute? What would the winds had to have been doing? How long would his fall have been? Does that match up with his account of what happened? And, yeah, so there's a lot of gut feel in there.
Yeah.
In addition to the math, but it's certainly a needle in a haystack. So one of the techniques we use, it's very basic, but, you know, we get up to high altitude, climb above the tree line, and then get the binoculars out and look for anything reflective, because, you know, the glint of aircraft aluminum is very different from a shiny rock or a patch of snow. So even from a distance, if you see something that's highly reflective, you can start to key in on areas.
Right. Wow. Now, have you guys utilized helicopters at all to sort of like narrow down the area?
In the past, yes. And with this search, one of our team members, Chris, who's, you know, one of the best aircraft searchers in the United States, and he's based just outside of LA, actually. He's flown the area numerous times in his own personal aircraft and in helicopters. But one of the challenges is that since it's in a national park and on the border of a national park, there's actually altitude limits. So you've got to maintain a ceiling of a couple thousand feet above the park. So normally in a helicopter, you can go 100 feet off the ground. But because it's in the park, you've got to stay a couple thousand feet up, and it makes it a lot harder to see areas. So that's, you know, that's one of the aspects that adds to this mystery. It's the fact that you can't get in there with these planes. So what we're looking at for next steps is high resolution satellite imagery and basically some analytical tools that you would basically run these photographs through, and you would tell the computer, look for X variable. So it would be something shiny or something discolored, and you would run it through to see if it picks up any anomalies, and then you kind of have the people go through that on the machines, and then you narrow it down from there. So we're not counting it as impossible yet, but it's certainly a challenge.
Yeah.
Were you able to find anything?
We didn't find anything from Steve's wreckage, but we did ground truth a few other wrecks that weren't on the national crash list. So basically, American government and Air Force maintain a known wreck site so that if, you know, any pilots flying over, they happen to see a wreck below and they call it in, you know, that can be verified and say, yes, that we know that wreck is there, or that's an unknown wreck. And, you know, maybe there's an individual still in that wreck that needs to be accounted for and the family needs to be informed. So what we ended up finding was just north of Bishop. We went after, this was a known wreck site, although the coordinates were not available. So we had a few miles in a steep-sided canyon that we walked through to get to this wreck site, and that was a World War II fighter jet.
Wow.
And the second one was one high above Mono Lake in the town of Leevining. It was about 1,500, 1,700 feet above that. It was actually a drop tank from a World War II fighter jet, and that had been seen in 2008, but nobody had actually verified it. Nobody ground truthed it, so they didn't know if it was a wreck or what it was. So a drop tank is basically, it looks like a torpedo that would sit at the tip of a wing, and these were common in, you know, World War II and slightly later era fighter jets.
Right.
So our theory on this one, because the serial number is all crumpled up, we actually can't trace it back to the aircraft yet. But it's that, you know, somebody was an Army or Navy pilot was flying in the area and probably doing military training exercises and dropped the tank to be able to maneuver, because you drop the weight, you're lighter, you're faster, and all those things. So we think that it's definitely from the 50s to probably the early 70s, because I don't think the Park Service or Forest Service would be too happy with pilots dropping tanks of jet fuel in national parks and national forests anymore. But yeah, that was an interesting find as well. So we're going to report that one to the relevant authorities.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, this is very exciting. Are you a pilot yourself?
Believe it or not, I am not a pilot.
Not a pilot.
Flying, but
you're fascinated with planes. especially when they're missing.
I'm fascinated with aircraft. I'm fascinated with mysteries, though, intriguing mysteries that you know, require you to think outside the box, put yourself into perhaps the pilot's mindset to try and solve these, bring in some science, and then ultimately bring in the athletes for, you know, a legitimate backcountry expedition.
Right.
So for me, I love science. I love ultra endurance athletics, and I love seeing new, wild, rugged places. So adventure science checks all the boxes for me.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, it's the mystery that really drives me.
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, you're obviously an adventurer and everything. I was wondering, what is your opinion of the Air Malaysia plane that's missing? Have you given it some thought?
Oh, yeah, I followed that one religiously.
Really?
It's a very, very interesting mystery. And, you know, there's a lot of technology in that airplane that that basically allows, well, it allowed it to be tracked into the to the southern Indian Ocean, and just, I guess it would have been west of Australia. You know, there's a lot of military interest as well, who's releasing all of their cards, but I essentially believe the story that's been put forward in the media now, that the airplane did travel south, most likely until it ran out of gas. You know, the human side of it, though, was it a suicide mission? Was it hijacked? You know, there's capabilities within that aircraft to almost be remotely controlled. So, you know, how did that all play in? I guess if the black box is recovered, then we'll know. But as far as the conspiracy theories go, that it headed north to perhaps one of the stands, or, you know, some kind of enemy stronghold, I don't really think the data supports it. But again, not having seen the data myself, you never know. But I think what's been put forward is accurate, and the rationale, the scientific tracking rationale behind it, certainly makes sense.
Sounds good. Well, Simon, do you want to, I mean, is there like a website that people can find out more about what you're doing, or a book or anything?
No book yet. I've got to stop doing expeditions and make some time to get home and get writing. But we do have a couple places that interested folks can follow along. The first website is adventurescience.ca. So that's just adventurescience, one word, .ca. And our current project and past projects are on there. And then we've got a Facebook page and a blog site that have been tracking this as well. So you can just go to facebook.com/adventurescience, and that will get you to the Facebook page. But yeah, Adventure Science is the name of the organization. And as for Boundless, we're shown on the Esquire Network, and tonight's our next episode. So I think we're 4 or 5 episodes in already.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah.
Very cool. So you take people to different places in the world, right? Like you said, in the Amazon, and or is that what you said, down in Peru, you said, Peru, right?
Yeah, so Adventure Science, we travel all over the world. Basically, where the mysteries take us, we will go. So our next project is looking to be either in northern Oman, near the Strait of Hormuz, which is a very remote, isolated region full of beautiful archaeological sites that Western scientists haven't explored because of the difficulty of reaching them. And we're also looking at a project in Madagascar, where we'll be looking for dinosaur tracks, undiscovered caves and caverns, and doing a lemur census. And lemurs are the endemic primates that live there, and they're facing you know, habitat loss, and their numbers are drastically reduced from where they were about 50 years ago. So yeah, some interesting scientific gains there, but also a fantastic project.
Yeah, wow. Sounds very interesting.
Yeah, modern day Indiana Jones. There you go. Simon Donato, thank you so much for this. This is very exciting. Everybody go out and watch Boundless on the Esquire channel. That's Tuesdays at 9. I'm sorry, at 10, 9 Central. And everybody tune in, check it out. And also the website, of course, is
adventurescience.ca.
We know you're Canadian because of the oat, but but I love Canadian accent. That sounds great. So, Simon, of course. So all the best to you, Simon. Good luck. And hopefully you come back on the show and tell us of some more adventures that happened since now.
Yeah, I'd love to have that opportunity. Thank you very much for chatting today. It's great to speak to you both.
Okay, you. Simon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye, guys.
Bye. Wow. Very interesting stuff.
Interesting.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, to devote your life to looking for missing things, mm-hmm. you know. I would love that, man. Who
Definitely.
Wants to sit in an office all day?
Right?
Yeah.
When you can go out and explore.
Right, and do the things you want, yeah. you know, and it's extreme sports, too. I mean, mm-hmm. they run so far.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. That's interesting.
I know.
To
I
find, know. And to be able, because I'm sure he sounds like somebody that doesn't give up until he's found.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that they're going to find something from this plane.
Probably, huh? They're not going to give
yeah.
up. Unless it was, of course, taken to another country, like you said.
Yeah.
Who knows, man?
No, I meant the one from 19...
Yeah, I know.
Oh, okay.
That's what I mean. Because he said, if you remember, he said in the beginning, people thought maybe he took it to Mexico
yeah.
and
Sorry,
sold
yeah.
it to another mm-hmm. government. So... Who knows, you know, that might be the case too.
Yeah.
But I just don't think if he had done that he would come back.
Yeah.
He probably would have disappeared or something,
true.
You know.
Very
Not
true.
Not come back to the States and hope that nobody would find out.
Yeah.
So, yes, I don't get that story. But it sounds interesting, you know. And I, but, you know, I mean, plane crashes are pretty scary stuff. You know, I used to fly... took flying lessons and everything, and a couple of times I was very close to death. But you know,
I remember the downward spiral.
Yeah,
story.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of tired of telling this story so many times, so I just figured I don't have to go over it again. You guys can go and listen back to some past shows, but I came close.
Yeah. Speaking of plane crashes, a plane crash that happened last year. In San Francisco.
Asiana.
Yeah,
right?
Flight 2014. It was pilot mismanagement and confusion, investigators concluded today.
Wow.
Federal accident investigators included today. Which is, I mean, pilot mismanagement, that's somebody you trust when you're on a plane. You trust
yeah.
that the pilot knows what he's doing. And mismanagement and confusion, I mean, that's scary stuff.
Yeah, it is, you know, because, and think how many hours they'd already flown
yeah.
before
mm-hmm.
that. You have to fly like thousands of hours.
It was too low and too slow during the landing attempt.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. It's like, it's a sad story. Luckily, not, you know, the only person that died was this woman that was run over by a fire truck when they rushed to the plane.
Yeah, three people were killed.
Oh, three were killed?
It was
okay.
Chinese teens seated in the back
okay.
who were not wearing their seatbelts.
Oh, wow.
But 200 were injured.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. One of the teenage girls survived the crash but was run over by two rescue vehicles in the chaos afterwards.
Yeah.
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 I know, and they were trying to put blame on that one, too. I don't know who was there, but... God, imagine, you know, you survive a plane crash only to be run over by a fire
truck. To be run over by not one, but two.
Two. Wow.
Two rescue vehicles. They're supposed to save you.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. Wow.
That's terrible. Did you ever see that commercial where this thing was viral on the internet of this airplane that lands, but his front gear is not coming down? So what you're seeing, it landing. And as it is, a pickup truck pulls out and start driving in front of it. And then the plane rests the front gear on the back of the truck.
I think I have seen this.
Have
yeah.
you seen that? I think I even mentioned it here. And it's like, I mean, you can tell it's probably fake.
Yeah.
But even if it is, it's fascinating to watch.
Yes,
you know?
I have seen it. Because I remember thinking this has to be fake.
Yeah. I know, because there's no camera watching the planes landing
right.
and everything, you know, close up. And the camera was moving with the plane and with the truck and
yeah.
everything.
And I think it was probably just maybe special effects
yeah.
that they were able
yeah.
to do that. Because there's no way that a plane could land on. It was a bus, right?
Mm.
Like some kind of...
No, it was like a pickup truck almost.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because surely...
Yeah, there's no way you can do
yeah.
that, you know. But
yeah.
it seemed like so amazing that people could do that if they really wanted to,
yeah.
I think, you know. I mean, people have done crazier things, let me tell you.
Very true.
Yeah. Wow, what was that? We could hear a plane here.
Must be right? Low.
Yeah, very low.
And this is LinkedIn. This story is LinkedIn as well. The Griffin ship, which was a 17th century French explorer, a vessel commanded by a 17th century French explorer. Somebody just, an explorer just found it, found remains. He's been looking for it for a long time.
Right.
And it
there's
was
another
found,
adventure, just like
yeah,
we talked to
found
it.
In, exactly, yeah. Found debris in the bottom of Lake Michigan.
Interesting.
Yeah, so he said he's 99% sure this is it.
Yeah.
It's the real deal.
I know. All those searchers for stuff, they know if they find it,
right.
they get very rich.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
Off of this treasure there and whatever, you know?
But it's what, I mean, and part of it, because he thought last year, in 2013, he pulled out a wooden slab that he thought was from the bow. But okay. then other people had said that, no, it's not. It's not from the bow. It's probably from a fishing boat or something like that. But if this was a vessel commanded by a 17th century French explorer, I mean, this is a long time ago that it's happened, right?
Right. Yeah.
So how would the wood have not completely perished?
Like disappear, dissipate, yeah. whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about, what, 500 years?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know, and especially wood, you know, but...
yeah.
No, but I think there's been ships that have survived because, mm-hmm. you know, they're big ships. It's not like a little boat or something, so...
That's very true.
Yeah, so it kind of stays there because I think they found some pirate ships and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I know they found a Civil War submarine off of the East Coast,
wow.
you know, somewhere, yeah, off of... I don't know, Georgia, wherever. And that was interesting. I remember that. That was a few years ago. And it was, yeah, like a very old submarine from the Civil War time.
That is interesting.
Yeah, I know.
That's crazy.
So these things, I guess, do last.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it...
Which makes for a good mystery story.
Yeah. I know. I remember when they used to cover it in the media... They showed what the submarine would have looked like, and the people just sit there like sardines, you know. It's not like the submarines we have today. It was like almost like the size of maybe a car or, mm-hmm. or something, not even as big as a bus or anything.
Wow, so they're not huge, like
no.
exactly like they are.
Yeah,
today.
They were just sitting there like yeah. in a boat or something.
Wow.
You know, the four crewmen or whatever.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. So, yeah, so that's adventures for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I'm comfortable in my own home.
I kind of like adventures. That's something
I would
love to do.
I know.
Yeah, I would love that.
I know. Well, do it. You know, go to Australia, do some extreme sports, and then come back, you know.
I know. I've been to Australia.
Really?
Yeah.
Actually, you can do all these sports here.
I went in about 2009. I loved it.
Yeah?
Absolutely loved it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought it was the best of England and in America.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like sort mm-hmm. of combined?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. How
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, I thought it was the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I'm curious to go there. That's one place I'd love to go that mm-hmm. I haven't been.
Yeah, I want to go to New Zealand as well.
Yeah.
While I was over there, I should have just gone to New Zealand.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess I didn't think it through properly.
So that's good. How long did you travel there for?
I was there for 2.5 weeks. My friend, my college roommate at the time, lives in Brisbane.
Okay.
Or lived in Brisbane. So we went up to the Great Barrier Reef, and it was fabulous.
Wow.
Yeah, we went snorkeling. Yeah, it was great.
How cool.
Yeah.
Great memories.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow.
Definitely.
I know. I need a good trip right about now. I could use one. I haven't traveled in a while.
You should take a trip.
I know. But the problem is that, well, I have the new station now. And also, the next time I'm able to leave, I need to go see my parents in Israel because they're getting old and sick and stuff. And we need to go see them. So I don't know when I'll see my next vacation, but I'm hoping, you know, so you try to take some short ones.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like weekend ones or whatever.
Like a long weekend. And 4th of July is coming up, so that could
That's
be a
true.
good
Yeah, except everybody travels then, you know. It's like, who wants to travel when everybody else is?
True. That's very true.
You know, I mean, you're like, right now, you're like, you're living out of town. If you had to go south or something, you'd be, you know, carefree. Yeah. But from here to just to get out of town, you know, on a holiday is crazy. It takes you an hour just to get out of town.
Yeah, you're
like,
right.
You know, to get to pass the airport from here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But, good point.
You know, and like, or if you go up north on the five, you know, on the four, where the four or five turns into the five, the traffic just stops.
It does. When you get to Santa Barbara and there's certain like points that it just like stops.
Yeah, it stops completely.
Yeah.
And so it's
then
hard
you have to go up the Grapevine and.
Yeah. So, you know, so sometimes I'm just like, oh man, I'll just stay home and I'll go on vacation when everybody's working.
Yeah.
You know,
if you could fly from Burbank.
That's true.
That's an easy one.
That's true.
It's right in the valley.
Yeah. But, you know, if you travel by plane, then you have to rent a car
and
everything, right?
It's a hassle. Just,
and sometimes a trip is just fun just to drive.
Yeah, definitely.
You know.
I agree.
So, well, that's what happens when you live in a big city. I remember when I lived in Johannesburg, I lived in Tel Aviv, I lived in Vegas. All these places, they all get packed during rush hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just here. And there's stop-and-go traffic in all these places I mentioned, and I'm sure in every other big city.
Right.
Where it's probably even worse. So, you know, we really can't complain. It's all relative.
It really is. And yes, yesterday I drove the busiest time, 5 p.m. It was like 5:15. I went up the 405 to get from the beach to the valley. I got there in 25 minutes.
Really?
No traffic.
Wow.
And I left again. It was about 7:45 expected some traffic.
Uh-huh.
Empty.
Really?
I was crazy. I was like, where is everyone? Is there something going on that I don't know about?
Yeah.
Why is there no one on the roads? It was the most insane thing.
Wow.
I mean, at 5:15, there was no traffic.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's the quickest I've ever got from the beach to the valley.
I know that sometimes... at night on the freeways, it's like open, wide open.
Yeah.
But at 5 in the afternoon.
I know. Wow. It was the craziest thing.
Mm.
It was bizarre.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I'm sure you weren't complaining.
I was not complaining. Yeah. But then I had because I left so early, I had loads of extra time.
Right.
So then it was like, great. Well, now I have to kill time. So I almost would have rather have sat in traffic just so I had something to do. Because I allowed time for it. So that's the downside with leaving really early.
Right.
Because then it's like...
Yeah, you get there early
and
stuff.
Now I have 35 minutes to kill.
I know. But you see, I mean, but you're the rare type. You know, most people will just be late.
Yeah.
You know, leave later, be late. And that's the thing. That's why I'm never late in this town.
Yeah.
Because you have to leave. You have to estimate how long it's going to take you. Give yourself a little extra time.
You do. And I hate that anxiety.
Yeah.
Like for when I'm late and I'm like, I'm late. I have to like cut through a million cars and get there. But I hate that feeling.
Yeah. And it's embarrassing to do, you know. But some people don't care.
No.
They just do it. They just do it, man. So that's funny. And, you know, so, yeah, and in L.A., it's just like, that's just the way it is.
It is.
You know.
It is.
There's not much you can do.
No. Never going to change.
No.
Unless they build 5 more freeways. But even if they did, I think it would still be super bad.
Yeah,
all the
it
time.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah.
For all the reasons we've mentioned many times before. But.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I like this town, man.
I do, too. What can you do? There's traffic everywhere.
Yeah. But, I mean, after having lived here for so many years, I think I've learned to estimate the drive time everywhere. So, you know, sometimes I leave like 12 minutes before I have to get there, and I get there right on time.
Yeah.
You know, so it really depends on, you know, and that's why I always say, you know, people that are late or chronically late are obviously people that can't manage time very well.
Mm-hmm.
They don't estimate time very well.
Right.
So if you don't, why don't you take some extra time?
But this... no real excuse now that we have like GPS on our phones. And I mean, my GPS on my phone is pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Usually it's within like 10 minutes.
Right.
So I'm always
it's
good.
Like right on.
And then there's Waze, the app that like, gives you the quickest,
Route and stuff.
Route, which I hate, but
yeah.
But does that
tells
app,
if there's accidents and stuff. Yeah,
exactly.
That's an Israeli team that developed it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So it was sold, what, to Google or something?
I'm not sure.
I think Google bought it for a lot of money, too.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. Wow. Some people, you know, it's like there's been a few, not just in Israel, but obviously in this country, many young people who have become like billionaires, you know, when they're 23, 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, there's money in programming, that's for sure.
Oh, completely.
You know?
Yes.
And we were talking about programmers yesterday when I told you nothing works, remember?
Yeah.
About with software and stuff, but, you know, yeah. Talking about technology, did you hear that there's now saying the new iPhones are going to be bigger? They're going to be, they're expecting them to come out in September, which is always when Apple announces iPhones and stuff. And so they're saying it's going to be quite a bit bigger. Right now, the screen is 4 inches, and it's going to be probably between 4.7 to 5.5.
Wow.
Or, or two sizes or something.
I think people will like that because I've seen a lot of I see people, it looks like they're walking around with an iPad mini on their
right. Like, those are those Androids, right?
Huge.
I know. They're really big phones.
And they barely fit in your pocket.
Right.
But people like that.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Some people do like it, and because I think they watch movies on it and stuff, you know, so it's easier.
I just think it looks bizarre when you're holding it up to your ear. And I mean, it's the size of your hand.
I know. That's why I love the iPhone, man. I love that it's small, mm-hmm. it's compact, it fits easily in your hand.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm going to be crazy about the bigger iPhones, but of course, if those are the only ones that come out, then what can I do, you know? I'll have to upgrade to the latest.
You'll have to get one.
I have to.
I like my iPhone. I have the 5S.
Yeah.
I like it.
It is. It's the 5S is great, I think. You know, I like the thumbprint thing.
See,
you know?
I don't use that, but I need to. Cause we've spoken about this, I think, haven't we?
Why? Is it that you don't know how to do it? Or?
Yeah, because I didn't realize that you could... When we spoke about it, you told me something that I didn't realize, but then I just
that
haven't got around
to... That you can still use your code.
That you can still use the code, that was it. But then I still just haven't got around to
It's just so much faster. I just put my finger on there, bam, you know?
See, I don't even have a code on mine.
Really?
Maybe, yeah.
So you need to do that. Just go into the settings, into privacy and whatever, and do that. Because if it falls into somebody's hands, man, your whole life is in there.
True.
You don't want people to be able to look at it. So I used to also be like lazy about putting in the code and stuff mm-hmm. on the previous phones before they had the fingerprint thing. And but then, you know, when I get this one, I finally decided, okay, I'm putting the code
in. I'm doing it, yeah.
So you have to have a code also in order to have the fingerprint thing. So,
right.
So you do it at the same time. But you know what I was reading yesterday? There's a lot of less thefts of smartphones. Because there's a lot of kill switches in there now, you know. So
exactly, and there's so many apps now that you can see exactly where your phone is located, and from that app you can turn the phone off,
right?
So it can't be turned back on. So there's no
point
in stealing
it. Becomes useless. So those thieves figure, what are we going to steal it for?
Exactly.
So they're saying that in many cities, the theft of phones have gone quite a bit down.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting stuff, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, so I guess that Samsung, they've got a lot of big screen phones and stuff like that. They're really giving Apple a run for their money.
Yeah, they are.
You know?
They are, definitely.
Yeah.
I think that's a next step for Apple that they needed to compete with those.
Yeah.
Because people do like the bigger screens.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess they do, you know. But then again, like I said, I don't watch really movies on the phone. So just give me something that fits in my hand and stuff.
Right.
I like compact things, yeah.
Yeah. Same.
I know. All right. Wow, we're out of time already. All right. Well, I guess that's it for today. I wanted to talk about the millionaire that left $75 million to his dogs, but we'll talk about that some other time. I mean, do you believe that $75 million for the dogs?
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. It's a lot of money for dogs.
A lot of
for anybody.
Yeah, a lot of money.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte right here on LA Talk Radio.